Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Two schools, a Walmart, a church, twice at an army base, twice at policemen in the streets. 108 dead, 154 wounded. That's the tally in Texas after 8 mass shootings since 2009. And that's just the mass shootings. With each new tragedy, Texans ask, why and what can be done? There are, of course, many views and many ideas, but one thing that has consistently been done is that firearms regulations in Texas get loosened. Interesting, because Texas used to have some of the strictest gun regulations in the country, and they had it with bipartisan support. A majority of Texans want basic gun safety laws, but they've ended up with the opposite. So why are politicians, who may privately believe in some restrictions on guns, unable to speak up for that majority of Texans? Well, today we're going to speak with a couple of Texans, both gun owners, by the way, and see if there is a way at all to get past the state's gridlocked gun debate. And we're going to start with Joe Moody. He's a Democratic state representative serving District 78. He's in El Paso. And Representative Moody is co-chair of the Interim Study Committee of the Criminal Justice Reform Committee, and he's also former Speaker pro tempore of the Texas House of Representatives. And you may remember that in 2019, 23 people were killed and 25 injured when a gunman, citing racial motives, opened fire in a Walmart in El Paso. Representative Moody, welcome to On Point.
Meghna, thank you for having me.
Given the tragedy that you experienced in El Paso a couple of years ago, I wonder what the last few days, the last week has been like for you, Representative, in the wake of the murders in Uvalde.
It's hard to not be instantly transported back to the feelings that I had on August 3rd. And even speaking about it right now, I can feel that kind of creeping into my mind. You know, 3 days after August 3rd, I dropped my oldest off at kindergarten for his first day of school. Very scared. Didn't know what to expect. Within a couple of days, there was an active shooter drill on campus because people were obviously very highly, being very cautious about what was going on. And, you know, after the shooting in Uvalde, the next day taking my kids back to that same campus and, you know, there's no way to explain it other than you're just experiencing that trauma again. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. You know, when your 8-year-old asks you if you heard that an entire class had been killed, what's the conversation? And I want to have that conversation with him. It's obviously something that he's hearing about and knowing about, but it is, it's incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. And knowing that we face such opposition to trying to create a safer environment for our kids, it becomes even more, heavy. It's a heavy feeling of that obligation to your children, just as a parent, but also to your community as a whole.
Yeah. Now, we should note that mass shootings in the United States are obviously far more common than they are in other countries. But within the U.S. context, mass shootings are the cause of, 2% of the overall gun deaths in this country. And that many, many more people die by suicide with a firearm. That's the bigger context here, and I know that also applies to Texas. But just listening to you struggle a little bit right now, Representative, it's clear that the experience of living in a community that has had a mass shooting doesn't leave an individual. Does the trauma stay with the community overall as well?
Absolutely. And I think because of the nature of the shooting here in El Paso, it was racially motivated, you know, targeted at our community, targeted at you know, immigrants at the, it really cut to the core of what makes our community beautiful. We're very accepting. This is an integrated community. It's binational. You know, everybody has family across the border. They know that people work across there. It is a vibrant, beautiful community that is accepting. And so that violence tore straight at the beauty of what we love about our community. And so I think that it touched every single one of us in that very profound way. And it's something I know that will never leave me. And when I speak to people, you know, just friends after I saw them after the Uvalde shooting, they just needed, you know, to hug, to hold one another. Mm. Even in that space, even almost 3 years later, it's that raw and it's that powerful.
Yeah. You know, our goal for today's show is deeper understanding, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because the debates have been had and they will continue to be had, the political debates. But I really want to get a sense of sort of why there seems to be, not just in Texas, but in many places across the country, this divide between, or this gap, let's call it a gap, not a divide, but a gap between sort of some areas of consensus that Texans themselves have about some shared belief about the need for some basic gun safety regulation and what actually happens in Austin. You know, because I used to cover the state house here in Massachusetts for years, and I often found that the culture inside a state house was a very, very different culture than in the rest of the state, right? It's like almost entirely two different places. So that's what I'd like to try to understand here a little bit. And so Representative Moody, just kind of on a general basis in Austin for, like, let's say for less controversial things than guns, what's state house culture like? Are you able to talk frequently with members across the aisle? Like, how does the process usually work?
Yeah, I've been in the legislature over a decade now, and in the main thing you heard when you got to the Capitol in Austin is, hey, we're not Washington, D.C. We sit with one another. We pick our – you know, we don't pick our seats by party. You're all over the floor. You mixed and matched. You know, we have Democrats that chair committees even though we're in the minority in leadership positions. You mentioned that I served as Speaker pro tem. I did that under Republican speakers, two of them, in fact. And so we have – in our past had a very healthy bipartisan conversation. Then depending on the makeup of the House, the numbers, there's 150 of us, you know, that'll kind of ebb and flow a little bit depending on, you know, how big a majority the other side had. Now, I've been in the minority my entire career, but that's never stopped me from working on thorny issues like the death penalty. I mean, you think in Texas that's something that you shouldn't be able to work on, but I found Republican counterparts even work on an issue like that together. And so we have a very good environment that seems to cultivate that working together. But in the last few years, as we've seen a hyper polarization and a hyper-partisanship emerge at the national level, it seems to be infecting our politics too and getting worse and worse. Even though the majority of Texans, like you said, have a consensus around many of these issues, the partisanship and polarization is ripping that apart.
Okay, so when you say that you can have conversations and work with in bipartisan groups, what does that actually look like? I mean, can you have like hallway conversations with other members? Is there, you know, are the working groups that are formed to deal with various proposals or issues, are they collegial when you get together? I know these sound like basic questions, but when we talk about polarization and extreme polarization, I mean, I've heard stories in state houses where, and obviously in Washington, where people like literally physically don't even talk to each other anymore.
Yeah, there's certainly some folks that have that approach in Austin. Those are not people that I associate with. Having a young family here, when I go down to Austin to do things, I want to be productive with my time. I want to get things done. Also knowing that I'm in the minority, if I want to accomplish any of the goals for my community or for my policy perspectives, then I have to have that across the aisle view. I can't get the votes unless I do. And so, you know, we can have those hallway conversations, you know, dinner conversations. I've even taken vacations with some of my Republican colleagues. I don't want to get them in trouble and name them here, but you know those are the types of things that we have a collegiality and a friendship that matters. And some people don't. Some people have those conversations behind closed doors, and then will be, in my opinion, you kind of change their public persona And that's unfortunate, because I think we could do much better if we lead forward with those types of honest conversations outwardly like we have sometimes behind closed doors.
Okay. So then does that same culture of at least a willingness to initially work together and talk apply when the issues of gun safety regulation comes up?
Always seems like a more difficult conversation to start, to be honest. But it's one that we engaged in some very significant ways after the shootings in Sutherland Springs and Santa Fe and El Paso, in different ways, in different conversations. What I feel like, though, is the weight of those conversations, it's hard to get up and over. Let's say you are able to achieve some consensus in the House. Well, now we have a whole nother chamber in the Senate, and we have the governor has to sign the bill. So there's so many layers to getting something passed into law that we might have a different culture of discussing these things in the House. But you get a pronouncement from the Senate that if you send that to us, it's not going to see the light of day. Mm. You know, that happened with the red flag law that I carry. And so those are the types of things that just stifle debate, and they're there are those that would rather shut it down than have those open conversations, which I don't think is healthy. It's okay to have these conversations, and let's say we don't land on a consensus, but let's get this out and the public us talk about it.
Yeah. Well, we've got about a minute or so before we have to take the first break, but you talked about the red flag laws that you carried, and you've held hearings on them. And there's one in particular that really stands out that you've told us about the hearings that you had after the Santa Fe shootings. Can you just quickly tell us what happened there?
Yeah, it was probably one of the most disturbing scenes I've ever seen. Adults open, carrying their weapons on their hip, standing menacingly close to these children that had just gone through a tragedy in Santa Fe. We offered our office as a safe space for them to sit in because they felt like they were threatened. These adults were mocking them when they would testify, snickering at them, saying things as they were, whispering kind of behind their backs as they were at the table testifying. It was very bizarre and very disturbing.
And these are Texans who came to the hearing, not your fellow members of...
No, these are members of the public that decided to come and harass these kids and intimidate them.
Mm. Well, you're listening to Representative Joe Moody. He's a Democratic state representative serving District 78 in El Paso. When we come back, we're going to hear from a Texas gun seller as well. And by the way, we did reach out to a number of Texas Republicans who serve or have served in the State House in Austin. They all either declined to join us or were unable to join us today. But we did make the effort. So we'll be back in just a minute. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And today we're talking with a couple of Texans about the reality of gun culture in Texas and also political culture in Texas and where the two meet and where the two divide. I'm joined today by Joe Moody. He's a Democratic state representative serving District 78, which covers much of northern El Paso County. And he's with us today from El Paso, Texas. And Representative Moody, hang on here for just a minute, because I want to introduce Michael Cargill into the conversation. He's the owner of the Central Texas Gunworks, a gun store and training facility. He also hosts a radio show called Come and Talk It. and he's with us from Austin. Mr. Cargill, welcome to you.
Good day, Meghna. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And you do definitely have a radio voice, don't you? Describe to me first, what brought you into into being a businessman or founding your business, Central Texas Gunworks?
Right. So I wanted to make sure that my family members had the tools they needed to protect themselves. I had a couple different little incidents happen with our family where my grandmother was going back to college to get a college degree this one particular day. And while she was sitting at a bus stop waiting for a bus to come, a guy came along, mugged her, and raped her. And so because of that, you know, we decided to take our own personal safety in our own hands. And so I actually, you know, opened up the gun store. I actually started teaching license to carry handgun courses, beginning firearm safety courses and all that stuff. And I wanted my family members to be comfortable with walking into a gun store and actually purchasing a firearm and you know, getting to a point where they refuse to be a victim.
Mm. Can you tell me a little bit more about yourself? Because I don't want to, I want you to reveal as much as you feel comfortable about, but I think if people got to know you, a lot of our listeners might think you're not a typical gun owner.
No, not at all. So I'm an African-American male. I'm probably one of the very few Black-owned gun store owners in the country. I'm in a same-sex relationship, been with my partner for 22 years, and I'm a Republican. And I'm very, very pro-Second Amendment.
Okay. So we'll get back to that in just a second here. But how would you describe, Mr. Cargill, what you think Texas gun culture is like?
Well, you have to let me paint the picture for you. When you go to the Texas State Capitol, you know, and this is one of the first things that I say to people when they're taking a class with us, I say going into the Texas State Capitol is like going into no other building, you know, no other capital in this nation. When you walk into the Capitol, there are two different, you know, ways to go in. On the left-hand side, one particular entrance, you go through like a metal detector. You can't take any weapons at all. You know, everyone goes through that one. But then there's another line that you can go through, and we call that a gun owner's line, a license to carry handgun holder line. When you go to that line, you show the trooper at the door your license to carry handgun. That trooper swipes your license in the computer. Everything pops up on the screen there, including your picture. And then in, you can walk into the Texas State Capitol openly carrying or concealed carrying a handgun. You can testify before your elected officials. You can testify for the Senate, the House committee, and you can let them know, you know, what you're upset about and, you know, how well they're doing and all that stuff. And you can do all of that while you're openly carrying or concealed carrying a handgun with a license to carry a handgun. That's only in Texas. Mm. Gotta love Texas.
And so let me turn back to Representative Moody here for a second. Same question to you, Representative. How would you describe what Texas gun culture is?
I think it's, and Michael, it's good to be with you. And I know Michael well and heard him testify. And he's someone that is responsible. And when I described as we left last break about people trying to intimidate kids with their weapons, that's something that Michael would never do. That's not the way that he conducts his business in the Capitol. So going to culture, this is an issue that, you know, I'm a gun owner. Many of the Democrats that I serve with are also gun owners. You know, this is a largely rural state. And so we've got a lot of folks that engage in hunting and sports shooting. Mr. Cargill talked about self-defense. And so that's an important component in this conversation, too. And that's why I think licensing and training is very important. And he knows all about that. But this is one of those things that you know, the majority of folks that we deal with in Texas and talk to and that are constituents of ours are gun owners or their family members are gun owners. And so it's an issue that's not too far away from anybody. And it has a long kind of ingrained history in the culture of Texas. And so that's kind of the underpinnings of what we have. But, you know, it certainly isn't the end of the conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so here's what I'd like to understand. Given the gun culture that both of you just described, which is longstanding in Texas, the interesting thing politically, as far as I can see, is that Texas, with that gun culture, also in the past had some of the toughest gun safety rules in the country, right? So Representative Moody, could you just take a second to give us some examples of some of the laws that were on the books in the past in Texas?
Well, it used to have restrictions on how you carry handguns. Most of the restrictions that we had were related to handguns, and that goes back to kind of the old West history of Texas, right? The more nefarious actors were the ones that would carry handguns. Mm-hmm. And so the restrictions that were in our laws were related to that. Long guns were long associated with hunting and sport and with self-defense at the home. Now, long guns from back then aren't congruous with what we would look at in that category today. But we had restrictions on, right, if you could conceal carry, then we went on to open carry, where you could carry. You know, we had campus restrictions. Those have now been relaxed. Certain areas of hotels and parking lots and schools. And so we had restrictions on locations. If you go back to the way you can restrict is the person carrying, right, who it is, what they can carry, and where they can carry. And we had a lot of those restrictions across the board here in Texas, and they've been slowly eroded over the last 20 years. Mm.
Well, so Mr. Cargill, let me turn back to you then, because you had said earlier that you are very pro Second Amendment. What does that mean to you?
That means that I do support constitutional carry. I do support people actually taking a class, you know, in the same breath. In order to carry a firearm, you should take a class, learn the laws, be proficient with that firearm. I believe in all of that. And so to me, that is a responsible gun owner.
And constitutional carry, how do you define that?
And constitutional carry means that anyone who has a right, you know, even anyone who can purchase, if you can legally purchase, then you should be able to, you know, carry that firearm.
Okay. Because I'm wondering, the previous restrictions that Representative Moody described that were on the books in Texas, let's just focus on sort of the where a person could carry a firearm. When those restrictions were in place, did it have an impact on your business or people's willingness to buy firearms, or did it have any kind of impact?
Right. So you, our laws really go back really, really far. Like, you know, Representative Moody said, you know, it goes back to like 1869 when we first started regulating firearms. And the history behind that was, you know, it was freed slaves couldn't have access to firearms. That's going to be the very first gun control law, you know, in Texas. And then you move forward a little bit. You know, we got our handgun license law in 1995. You know, Texas said, hey, you know, let's get a concealed handgun license. That was as a result of what happened at the Luby shooting in Killeen, Texas. A guy goes into the restaurant there, you know, after someone ends up killing random people and trying to kill the person that he was actually targeting as well. And so they said, well, we need to get a concealed handgun license program. Let's get that started. And they did in 1995. And it was a big to-do about that, you know. And then, you know, speed forward a little bit, we finally were able to, the legislature passed open carry, but you had to have a license to carry a handgun in order to openly carry a handgun. And then speed forward, we got campus carry, you know, right around that same year, where in Texas, you have a license to carry a handgun, you can actually conceal carry your handgun inside the building of a public institution. And that is a public university. So like the University of Texas, where I am today, I'm, you know, I can conceal carry my handgun here, Texas University, Texas A&M, you know, a public institution, not your private. Your private institutions have the option to ban it, which they all do. So that, you know, that's kind of, you know, how, you know, just to paint that picture of Texas and the gun culture here.
Okay. So where do you see overlap, if any, right, between folks who want to either sort of reinstate some of the restrictions that were in place or maybe create new laws? Representative Moody had talked about red flag proposals in Texas. Where do you see overlap between ideas like that and your vision, as you called it, of constitutional carry in Texas?
Right. So there's some things that I call, you know, bad, you know, consequences of bad legislation. And not that, you know, the legislatures, their intentions are good, I believe. But then as a result of that, there are other things that actually happen, which, you know, can have a bad result. So, for example, in 2020, when COVID-19 happened, the country shut down. You know, in Texas, the governor says, you know, all the bars have to close. Well, so all the bars close. But in order for a bar to open, they had to serve food. So what they did was they changed their liquor license from a bar to a restaurant. In a bar in Texas, you cannot take any firearms inside of a bar. You know, you can't take any knives over 5.5 inches inside of a bar in Texas. But when they changed their bar to a restaurant, when they changed that liquor license, that means that now you can actually take your gun inside of a restaurant. You can take any size knife inside of a restaurant. So in Austin, Texas, we have a party district, where you have a lot of bars. It's called Sixth Street. And you have 90% of those bars actually changed their liquor license to a restaurant. So that means that 90% of them now, even today in 2022, 90% of them still have their liquor license as a restaurant. That means guns are legal inside what used to be bars are now restaurants, and any size knife is legal inside there. And then there's some other things that come along with that that you can prevent them from carrying. But because of our laws, here's how things played out. Mm. You know, you have with a license to carry a handgun, you could be 0.08 now as of 2021, September the 1st of 2021. You have your license to carry a handgun, you could be 0.08, the legal limit of intoxication. When you walk into a business and they have a sign posted that says you can't bring a gun inside, as a license holder, if you don't see the sign, you don't notice it, then they have to tell you verbally to leave. So now here we are, 2022. You go to those what used to be bars are now restaurants in a party district, and I walk inside. It's now a restaurant. I can take my gun inside. I have a license to carry a handgun. I go inside. I can sit at the bar, have a drink, be 0.08. And if they had a sign posted, I didn't see the sign, didn't notice it, and legally be 0.08 inside that what used to be a bar is now a restaurant.
I'm taking this to mean that you do not think that is a good idea.
No, we found out back in the 1800s, guns and alcohol do not mix. And that's why we got certain restrictions on firearms.
Okay. So in a sense, and Representative Moody, I promise to come back to you here in a second. But Mr. Cargill, in a sense, what you are actually saying is that there are some places, some kinds of regulations and restrictions, which are preventative, that you think are a good idea, right? Like preventing guns and alcohol from mixing, you think is a good idea. So what about red flag law proposals that would also essentially be a kind of preventative order that would restrict gun possession from some people who are raising red flags in the eyes of mental health professionals or law enforcement?
Right. So we do have some laws on the books right now that I believe that, you know, they would work if those different entities actually use them. So if the police officer, you know, is going to arrest this person, act on, you know, whoever's asking that police officer to act on it, that all has to happen. The parents have to be involved. You know, all these different shootings that we're talking about today, you know, these kids or these 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, whatever you want to call them, adults, you know, had parents. And no one reported them. You know, if they did report them, then the law enforcement didn't act on it. In order for any of these laws that we're talking about that we already have now, rather than putting new laws on the books, then we need to make sure that we enforce the laws we have now by saying, hey, if you're a parent, you need to do something, you know, with your son, you know, who's, you know, experiencing anger or something like that. Get him some counseling. Get him, you know, maybe call law enforcement if you can't handle it. Because what we're having is we're having parents that can't handle their kids, dumping them off on the grandparents, which we saw this previous shooting here. And the grandparents can't handle this person, you know, with that type of anger. And so now, as a result, we're left to deal with this as a society.
Well, I'll note that Governor Abbott himself said that within many, many miles of Uvalde, there was basically no mental health services. So that's another issue on top of this. But Representative Moody, go ahead and respond to what you heard Michael Cargill say about if there's any sort of overlap between a Texan like him and his view of what gun rights should be versus the kind of gun safety rules or regulations you'd like to see in place, Representative.
I think he raises a good issue about mixing alcohol and weapons, right? And the reason you have that, right, that the broad policy decision you're making there is like, hey, maybe you're not going to make the best decisions when you're intoxicated, and you shouldn't have a lethal weapon with you. Well, that goes the same with age restrictions, which goes to what we're talking about in Uvalde, right? We know by brain science, you know, that young people make impulsive decisions. They don't have a fully developed brain, and so there is good. There is good science behind also creating restriction based on age. We have these cases that are coming out of Florida and California that have done just that. Let's do that here in Texas. That's directly talks about the shooter there in Uvalde. But let's go further than that, because Mr. Cargill also talks about, let's enforce the laws that are on the books. A lot of people talk about mental health, and it's important. It's critical. I've worked on mental health policy in Texas for 5-6 years now. It is very important. But in the conversation around gun violence, it is a red herring, right? Because people that have mental health issues are more likely to be the victim of violent crime than be the perpetrator of violent crime. The real overlap that we should look at is domestic violence and sexual violence, right? There is a direct correlation between mass shooters and those that are involved in these indiscriminate mass killings and domestic violence and sexual violence. We do have laws on our books now that are protective order laws, much like the red flag law, which is a protective order law. We have some that deal with domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, human trafficking, indecent assault, where a judge today, judge in El Paso today, will issue protective orders under those statutes. They'll do it in Austin, where Mr. Cargill is as well. And part of those orders say, this person should not possess a firearm while this protective order is pending. And I heard people say that we need to enforce our laws, but when I brought a bill to enforce that very law, they pushed back and they opposed it. Mm-hmm. So we need to come to the table and figure out what we want to enforce.
Well, Representative Joe Moody is a Democratic state representative serving District 78. He's with us today from El Paso. And Michael Cargill, owner of Central Texas Gunworks and host of the radio show Come and Talk It. He's with us from Austin. We'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Three decades ago, Sterling Cunio was an angry, violent teenager facing life without parole. Today, he's a celebrated author and a peacemaker. His journey is a window into how violence is perpetuated in this country, but it's also a story about how people change.
There's no better example of a person who's prepared to be released.
And about people changing the system.
We have to reimagine what we're doing, because what we're doing isn't working.
This is Cell Blocks to Mountaintops, a podcast and video series. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about Texas gun laws and Texas gun culture as well. And Michael Cargill joins us. He's the owner of Central Texas Gunworks, a gun store and training facility, and also host of the radio show Come and Talk It. He's with us from Austin, Texas. Joe Moody joins us as well. He's a Democratic state representative serving in District 78, which covers much of northern El Paso County. And he joins us today from El Paso. And I just want to remind folks again that we reached out to several Texas legislators who are Republicans and invited them to join us, current legislators or former legislators, but they either all declined or were unavailable. But as Mr. Cargill said today, he's a very pro Second Amendment and a Republican as well, though hasn't served in the state house yet. Let me put it that way, Mr. Cargill. Okay, so I want to rewind the clock a little bit back to May of 2021. And this is a moment from when the Texas House was debating HB 1927, which would allow most people over 21 to carry a handgun in public without a permit. And here's a moment of where Representative Moody spoke during that debate.
I'm not anti-gun. I'm a gun owner, like a lot of us here, but I'm also like most Texans, Democrats, Republicans, and independents alike, in that we don't want felons to be able to buy a gun without a background check. We don't want a court to hold a hearing, grant a protective order against a domestic abuser, then have no way to enforce it. We want people who intentionally lie on background checks to be prosecutable. We want some common sense things we all know there's broad bipartisan support for in this state.
That's from May 2021. So, Representative Moody, here's a question which a lot of listeners want answered. After every mass shooting, which is, they're all tragedies and they're also potentially politically motivating events, right? A legislature has several options regarding guns. They can increase gun safety regulations in a state. They can do nothing, right? They can also make no changes, or they can further relax the regulations. Can you explain why, Representative Moody, that in the past many years, the Texas legislature has opted for that last choice to further relax the restrictions? Why?
Yeah, look, I don't pretend to know about the ins and outs of Republican primary politics. Mr. Cargill can probably speak to that. But I think there's a very loud minority of folks that demand the kind of least restrictive policy. Their answer is more guns in more places after these tragedies. But, you know, my answer to them is very simple. If more guns were the solution to our problem, we'd be the safest country in the world. We have more guns than people in the United States, yet we continue to suffer these violent acts year after year after year after year. So, I think, unfortunately, because we are in this hyper-partisan, hyper-polarized environment, we have people that are answering to the far fringes rather than coming together and building that consensus like we talked about. And the things that I mentioned in that debate, those are things that are very common sense. In fact, one of them actually did get passed, and that's someone who lies on a background check, right? That goes back to the Midland Odessa shooting in which someone lied on a background check. They weren't able to purchase the weapon, and then what did they do? They went to a private sale where they weren't subject to the same background check, and they got a weapon and they murdered people, right? That's why we need to extend further and say we need to figure out in these private sales who's buying these weapons. We met with federally licensed firearm dealers in the wake of El Paso, and they said, we'd love to do these exchange, these sales in our stores. We'd love to bring people in and do them. We want to encourage safe gun ownership. We want to make sure that we know who has these weapons. The governor himself in these meetings said, why should a terrorist be able to purchase a gun in a private sale that they couldn't do anywhere else? Why aren't we trying to curb this? Those were his words at that table in the wake of El Paso, yet we still haven't closed that loophole. These are things that I know we can do, and they're thorny and they're difficult, but there is no policy reason to not do it.
Well, so that's why I'm relying on, you know, your, as much as you can share about the conversations that you've had in Austin with fellow legislators, because, you know, it's one thing to oppose an idea because you're standing on principle, right? And I'm going to just offer that I think Mr. Cargill has a set of principles that he adheres to that leads him to his view of what gun regulation in Texas should be. But it's another thing to make decisions as a political leader if you're feeling pressure. I mean, is it as basic as that? Like, you, as far as you can tell, like when you have some of those conversations with Republicans in the State House in Austin, do any of them even dare whisper under their breath to you that, like, I would actually do something about this, but I'm gonna get primaried?
I mean, we talked about background checks, and we heard it from, you know, leaders statewide at the Republican level that we need to figure this out. I mean, I just said that. I mean, the governor said this in a meeting with, I wasn't the only one there. You know, Lieutenant Governor said the same thing. So these are conversations we've had, and then it seems like when they get floated and there's political pushback, people aren't willing to continue to work on good policy. A mentor of mine out of Houston always told me, good policy makes good politics. And the easy way out is just is taking a politically expedient route. And that's not the answer. It's not the answer for those parents in Uvalde who are staring at the empty beds of their children. Mm. It's not the answer for them. And if we don't have the courage to confront what we can do here and push away the bizarre conspiracy theories that somehow the government's going to come snatch up all our guns, which isn't going to happen. Let's push away that type of rhetoric, and let's come to the table and figure out how to make people safer. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear people say, well, you know, criminals don't follow laws. Why are we going to make more laws? Criminals don't follow them. Well, then get rid of the whole penal code. Why do we have murder statutes? Why do we have anything then? That is a nonsensical argument. You know, laws are existed to create obstacles and accountability. And they can do that for weapons as well. And that's smart policy, which should make good politics. Mm.
Well, Michael Cargill, I appreciate your patience here. Jump in. Respond to what Representative Moody said about, you know, he thinks that a fringe has essentially sort of hijacked the Texas legislature's ability, or Austin in general, to find common ground for regulations that Texans could agree on would make them safer.
Right. So, you know, there's another option that we have when we look at these different cases, with the exception of the private sale, and that is to go back and investigate, you know, what went wrong, you know, who's responsible, where the ball was dropped. You know, in my gun store, I've had someone walk into the store to try to buy a firearm one particular day, and we delayed the person because my staff felt uneasy about him. You know, and as a gun store, this is going to be, you know, one of our responsibilities. If something's not right, then don't do that sale. And we have a certain, you know, procedure, which I'm not going to say on the radio here, what I would do in a particular situation if we didn't feel comfortable selling the firearm to a person, where legally under the law, we could. I could legally transfer it to them. But then there's something that we would do where we wouldn't sell the gun to them. It turned out that my staff was right. You know, this person ended up having a list of names of people that he was going to go and shoot, and turned out he was actually going to commit a mass shooting in Austin. And so we prevented that by not transferring the firearm to that person.
Did you report that person to the police?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So in every case, everything that happens, you know, yes, we always contact law enforcement. And that's another thing. You know, not always does that happen. It's not always that easy. You know, you don't always see that. They don't always give you signs. And there are times when there's another thing that happens where people walk into a gun store to sell us a firearm or want us to repair a gun. Do you know that there's no gun store in this country, in the nation, where if a person walks into the gun store with a firearm, whether it's repair, sale, whatever, that gun store cannot verify that gun's been reported stolen. That's another issue. Hmm. You know, so there are a lot of different things that we can look at, but we have to look at all the different shootings and, you know, what happened, what went wrong, and then see if we can fix those issues.
Yeah. You know, so even on those things that you say that can be looked at, to me, it sounds like what Representative Moody is saying is that the Texas State House, when the rubber meets the road about looking at anything regarding guns, the can doesn't happen. Like, it's just impossible to even start looking at things. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, let's take a, you know, just pick any shooting and let's pick it apart and see if we can figure out, you know, is there something already on the books that would have actually prevented that? And in most cases, you're going to see, yes, it was. With the exception of the one that Representative Moody was talking about, as far as the private sale, then that's going to be something totally different. And then there are people that are going to argue and debate against the private sale. You know, they'll bring up, you know, different issues why you shouldn't do that. But in most of these cases, you know, we do have laws on the books. We just need them enforced. We need, you know, we talked about in Santa Fe, with the Santa Fe High School shooting that happened in 2018 in Texas. The whole big talk of that was doors, too many doors, securing the doors. Here we have in Uvalde where apparently a door was open or left open. And they're going back and forth on that today. We don't know what's true, what's not true. And the shooter gained entry into the building by that door.
Well, the latest reporting that we can find says that the door was not left open.
I know they're going back and forth on that. We don't know what's true because now the school district is not being cooperative with the Texas Department of Public Safety, and neither is the police chief, which is another issue. We need to have some police accountability. We need to get away from having law enforcement investigate themselves and clear themselves of any wrongdoing. We need to have some type of civilian oversight over law enforcement that can actually prosecute. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I have to say, we have been striving over the course of all our coverage, but especially this week, to craft conversations that are rational and respectful. Because I think it's really important for us as Americans to be able to do that, at least in some spaces. So I want to say thank you to both of you gentlemen for helping us do that. And at the same time, though, I'm feeling a little bit of cognitive dissonance, to be perfectly frank, right? Because we might be able to achieve this here in the space of this radio program, but it feels like it's at a mismatch when it comes to saying, well, what's actually happening on the ground. And so Representative Moody, I'll turn back to you on this. The red flag law proposal keeps coming back up in my mind here because it wasn't that long ago that Governor Abbott himself actually asked lawmakers to consider a red flag proposal that he at that time claimed could prevent some mass shootings. But then what? By the time 2019 rolled around, he was asked by reporters if he still supported a red flag law. And he said at that time, a measure wasn't necessary in Texas anymore. So there's some kind of, again, it's my cognitive dissonance that I think I and maybe some other listeners right along with me are struggling with right now, because it doesn't seem like the conversation we're having right now is matching what's happening when it comes to legislative and lawmaking politics and circles in Austin.
Yeah, it doesn't match. And quite honestly, the governor was correct. And not only would an extreme risk protective order bill help in potentially in these indiscriminate mass killings, it is more impactful when we talk about suicide. Right? That's what the data shows us. And death by gun in this country, you were talking about handguns and suicide by and large. So that's the real. You talked about in the earlier part of the show. You know, we end up talking a lot about a very small segment of the gun related deaths because of, you know, the notoriety around mass killings. But these others are the ones that we need to wrap our arms around too. What happened, and this is why I held a 12-hour hearing. This is a hearing I talked about earlier. And I think Mr. Cargo was probably there about this. I said, let's parse this out. Let's talk about it, because protective orders aren't anything new in Texas. And a red flag law is just taking different conduct, the way you're acting and the way that that intersects with your access to weapons, and applying the same protective order statute that we have had on the books for years. There's nothing different. There's nothing scary. There's nothing that's been abused in the system today or yesterday. And so why are we afraid to have this conversation? And I believe you've gotten to an all or nothing mentality among some. You have the chair of the Republican Party of the state of Texas says, we can't give an inch. Don't give an inch on anything. And I said, and so that's someone who I think who's more concerned about the politics than about the real life policy. You know, that's also someone who threatened to shoot a fellow lawmaker at one point. And so this is the type of rhetoric that we've allowed to be too commonplace. And we've got to get away from that and get people at the table. Like Michael and I are talking, we may not always agree. In fact, we probably don't. But there's been various issues that we have. And so when you talk about age restrictions, we talk about let's increase training. Let's create ways to get better training for folks that are going to carry weapons. We do it for cars. Why can't we do it for guns? Permitless carry is a mistake. It's going to create pervasive access to weapons. It's going to create more violence. Background checks are important. We've heard our state leaders say that. You know, if we can't get red flag laws, then let's enforce the protective order laws that we have on the books today, because much of that conduct is tied to mass killings, domestic violence, sexual violence, and those types of things. We've even heard that out of Uvalde in the history of this shooter, right? So those are things that we can gravitate towards. I get you know, criticized by some people, even in my own party, like, why do you keep working with folks? Why do you keep reaching across the aisle? They're just not going to do anything, ever, ever, ever are going to do anything. I said, well, I made a commitment to the people here in El Paso in the wake of the shooting here, that I will never stop working on these issues until we have safer communities. And we're going to do that in a thoughtful way and in a consistent way over time.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Cargill, we've only got about 30 seconds left. I wonder, you very clearly described yourself as extremely pro-Second Amendment. Do you feel that extremely pro-Second Amendment stance is an all-or-nothing stance for you?
No, but I'm definitely firm on that. And I do want to say this before we go. It's a privilege to, you know, be on the radio to talk to Representative Moody, because if the Democrats take over the Texas House, Representative Moody will be the next speaker. So I'm glad that you actually had Representative Moody on this show. So as goes Texas, goes the rest of the nation.
Well, Michael Cargill, owner of Central Texas Gunworks, a gun store and training facility, and host of the radio show Come and Talk It, joined us today from Austin, Texas. Mr. Cargill, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Joe Moody, Democratic State Representative serving District 78, which covers much of northern El Paso County, with us from El Paso. Representative Moody, thank you very much.
Thank you, Meghna. I appreciate the opportunity.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.